Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Nazi So Sweet. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
Gummy bears are perhaps one of the most ubiquitous candies, and in my experience, has a devoted, devoted following. So I have to ask you, Jason, what is your stance on gummy bears?
I love gummy bears. I love gummy candies.
You're a gummy man.
I love all candy. I eat candy all the time. It's really gross. Right now, I'm eating. Right now, I've switched from Mike and Ike's to Runts.
Yeah.
Do you know Runts?
Oh, I know Runts.
It's hard to find Runts
at the
store.
That's not in a...
No, Runts are, they're like little...
No, I know, but there's like Runt clusters and there's Runt ropes.
Oh, okay. These are... Are you thinking of Nerds?
Yes. No, Runts are the tiny fruits.
Oh,
the
tiny fruits. They're actually really hard to find. I actually had to order them. Seriously, the production, the Wonka production on Runts has, I guess...
Wow, that's...
Slowed down.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm a huge fan of gummy fruit flavored. I mean, I love chocolate, but my go-to is like something like gummy bears.
Married to gummies.
Yes.
Cheat on gummies with a chocolate. Or a little tiny bowl of Runts.
Little tiny? No.
I mean, in the still life that Runts would be, they're just small. They're cute and small, but you eat a ton of them.
I'm getting them in boxes of 12. That's how I'm rolling.
From Amazon? From where?
Yeah, I usually find somebody from Amazon.
Troll
or
them.
No, actually, or eBay.
Okay. eBay Runts.
Yeah, I get my eBay Runts.
Incredible. Of course, gummies are very popular. The gummy market did an estimated $21.4 billion in sales and is projected to reach $52.4 billion by 2030. You are a case in point. But few people know the real story behind these chunky, colorful, toothsome little bears until now. Today on Ghost Town, the dark, secret-ish history of the gummy bear. First, it's important to know how gummy bears are made. Very simply put, gelatin candy is made by drawing collagen proteins out of animal products, mostly bones, but also skin, tendons, and connective tissues, and cooking them down to a powder. That's why they're not vegan. A lot of people know this. Well, some people don't. I don't know. Surprising to some. The powder is mixed with cooking sugar, corn syrup, water, and whatever flavor you're into to create a gel that's placed in a shaped mold, cooled to set, and sometimes tumbled in sugar or coated in a delicious candy shell, a la a Runt. Because it's that simple, we've made jelly or gummy candies for hundreds of years. Turkish Delight originated in the Ottoman Empire roughly 2.5 centuries ago, and instead of gelatin, they used flour, or often starch. In 1777, Istanbul confectioner Hasi Bekir Efendi, hopefully I'm saying that correctly, opened a candy shop and started selling sweet jellied cubes in a variety of flavors. In fact, and here's a testament to the popularity of gummy candy, Effendi's store is still there today, the oldest business in Turkey, and according to the BBC, also one of the 100 oldest still operating businesses on Earth, on this planet. I know. But back to the 1700s, Turkish Delight soon became popular internationally. Europeans wanted to make the candy so badly, but never quite got the recipe right. So what they did do, well, according to food historian Laura Mason, they plagiarized the recipe. Or, riffed, I guess. That's the nicer thing to say. Using gelatin instead of flour or starch, Europe began creating their own version of Turkish Delight, which was, of course, an entirely different candy altogether. In 1909, British candy maker Charles Gordon Maynard debuted a product called Wine Gums, one of the first commercial sweets made with gelatin. Unfortunately, wine gums didn't contain actual wine, unfortunately for me. They were these small, pastille-shaped candies in these fruit flavors. Oddly enough, they were marketed as an alternative to drinking. So I guess in the spirit of that, on the candy's face was printed a name of a wine. There's port, there's sherry, there's burgundy, for example. As odd as these non-alcoholic yet alcohol-celebrating candies were, they were the closest thing to what one could recognize as a gummy candy. Sweet and fruity, small in shape, and with a chewy texture. Winegums pioneered the gelatin gummy formula, and like a Fendi store, they're actually still around today. You can get them on eBay and Amazon. Would you like to try these candies?
Yes, I would.
You're interested.
I'm interested.
You're interested. Yeah,
count me in.
Okay, great.
Also, I mentioned about gummy bears as somebody who has had a colonoscopy.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm that old. Can you believe it? I'm a 19-year-old who had a colonoscopy. It's crazy.
Medical marvel.
One thing that you technically can eat while you're prepping for a colonoscopy is gummy bears because of the makeup of it. It's solid, but your, I guess, body doesn't like register it in the same way of the foods you should avoid. So
wow.
If your next colonoscopy,
just load up on gummy bears.
I mean, I don't know about load up, but I did load up. So I was like, great. I love it.
It's just like a hunk of gelatin sitting in your stomach while you're getting ready to be.
Well, it's like you can have Jello.
Yeah.
So it kind of falls under that category.
Jello. Yeah, but I would imagine digesting it is harder, but maybe not. We'll see.
Yeah.
Your colonoscopy went well, though.
Yeah,
right?
you picked me up from it. Remember?
I know, I do. Yeah. I think, well, you had a false start. Right?
I did. I had to get to two in a row.
Mm.
If you want to find out more about my multiple colonoscopies, head over to Patreon where I just talk about, and I got photo, I got pics. I got pics. Head over to the Patreon for that.
In 1920, Hans Riegel of Bonn, Germany, became frustrated with his dead-end job as a confectionery worker and decided to start his own sweets company. His original product was a hard, colorless candy using a copper kettle and marble slab in his kitchen. Fun. Riegel sold the candy at local street fairs, and his wife and her bicycle served as the business's delivery service. The name of this German candy company? Haribo, a combination of the first two letters of his own first and last names and hometown, Hans Riegel of Bonn. Haribo. The Haribo colorless disc, yum, sold well, but not well enough to take his operation to the next level. Then in 1922, Riegel had the idea to mold fruit-flavored gelatin into the shape of bears. The bear was a very specific choice, a cruel homage to a European tradition that goes back centuries, the trained dancing bear. The idea of poaching bears from the wild and keeping them captive, pulling out their teeth and torturing them to train it to do tricks, gained popularity in the Middle Ages. I could go into many of the means that these bears were trained, but honestly, it's horrible and I don't want to think about it, and it is illegal now in most countries. But the darkness around this cultural mainstay persisted until the modern era. In fact, in Germany, dancing bears were fairly common even around 100 years ago. And Riegel knew the image of the bear, while inhumane, of course, was something his customer would recognize. It would be evocative of a collective European history, European childhood, festivals, in a word, fun. And so the classic gummy bear was born. And as you guessed it, people loved it. By 1960, Tanzbären, or dancing bears, were a staple of German sweet shops, and Haribo was ready to expand. They began selling their products to a wider European market, and the bear got a makeover as well, from a more naturalistic bear to a pudgier, simple, teddy bear-like shape we all know and perhaps love today. In 1967, Haribo started manufacturing packs of multicolored gummy bears after previously only making them in one color. Haribo's bears now came in five classic flavors and colors. Strawberry, lemon, orange, pineapple, and raspberry. The gummy craze didn't even reach the U.S. until the 1980s. But when it did, well, it opened a whole new can of gummies. I'm sorry about that. More after this break. In 1981, the gummy bear officially came to America with two companies, Hermann Gullitz and Brock, effectively using the Haribo model to make gummy bears, animals, fruits, and so much more. Not to be outdone on their own product, in 1982, Haribo had its own office built in the U.S. in Baltimore, Maryland. Soon, Americans were eating gummy candy in every form imaginable, and Haribo itself began acquiring other companies, diversifying their own products into different gummy shapes and flavors, and even expanding into the marshmallow market. Gummy shapes in the 80s ranged from donkey gummies to Dungeons and Dragons-shaped gummies to some of the classics, like gummy sharks and peach rings, for example. Not to be outdone and continuing on with the gummy animal abuse connection, which created another German gummy company called Trolli, created a roadkill gummy. Beginning in 1975, Trolli was known for wild shapes, but the roadkill gummy, squished animal shapes complete with tire marks, went a bit too far. After pressure from animal rights activists, the roadkill gummy was discontinued in 2005. In the 80s, though, gummy mania was even infiltrating television. In 1985, Adventures of the Gummy Bears premiered on NBC, and if you can believe it, it was Disney's first foray into television animation. The show aired Saturday mornings and featured a troop of benevolent bears with magical powers, very loosely based on the candy, who help a boy combat a tyrannical duke looking to steal the bear's potent gummy berry juice. Running for 65 episodes from 1985 to 1991, the series ushered in an era of Disney-produced television that would pave the way for things like, DuckTales, Tailspin, Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, and of course, the Disney Channel itself. On August 22, 2009, co-owner Paul Riegel died at 83. Not only had he made many of the Haribo machines himself, but he also invented the licorice wheel winding machine, which is still used today. On October 15, 2013, Hans Riegel Jr. passed away. He had managed the commercial side of Haribo for 67 years and was the oldest living active managing director in Germany. In 2018, Haribo became the number one selling gummy brand in the United States and is found in over 120 countries. A confectionery giant, but at what cost? The answer lies back in post-war Germany. So let's rewind for a moment before we conclude this episode back to the 1940s for our last bit of history on the gummy bear. So Hans Riegel died in 1945, but his son, Hans Riegel Jr., and brother Paul Riegel carried the torch. Haribo had only about 30 recorded employees immediately after World War II, but as West Germany's economy took off, in 5 short years, Haribo would have close to 1,000 employees. So why was the number of employees so low during and after the war? I figured they had just pared down beforehand, like many of the employees, went to war or something. But this seems to be the source of some historical controversy. On the one hand, World War II halted lots of food production and depleted resources. Again, as you might imagine, it was the war and maybe people didn't have as much money for candy. But according to Time, there's a much darker explanation than those. Back in 2000, a consortium of companies that used forced labor, including Jews and other oppressed people, during World War II, all got together and created a $2.4 billion fund for the surviving workers. At the time, however, there were some holdouts to contributing to this fund for, again, survivors of the war, of the Holocaust. According to Time magazine, Tagesspiegel, a British newspaper, wrote to 12 companies asking why they had not joined the foundation. Only half responded. Adidas Salomon, maker of sneakers, said that the board of directors was currently weighing in its participation, while Grunzweig and Hartmann, a producer of insulation, said it didn't feel obliged to contribute because it was part of a French firm in World War II under forced administration. Haribo, makers of the Jelly Bear candy sold around the world, was named in the German parliament as having used forced labor. It vehemently denies. A charge it denies. It says of the fund that, quote, "Under the cover of alleged solidarity, the thesis of collective guilt is being brought up again. There is no doubt about the suffering that existed, but that cannot be righted now." Haribo, not a good look. According to Time magazine, of the 400 companies with suspected ties to forced labor, only 199 agreed to contribute to the fund. Does this mean Haribo used prisoners and victims of the war to make their candy and are downplaying the trauma and lives lost during the Holocaust and World War II? Not officially, but like the history of this adorable and addictive candy, all is not what it seems.